The Upland Nomads podcast is brought to you by two guys that share a common passion, chasing birds and following our dogs through some of the most beautiful landscapes in the world, the uplands. Join us while we have in-depth conversations with others from all over the country that enjoy and share the same passions as us. Welcome to the Upland Nomads podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Upland Nomads podcast. This episode is the second part of our second Beer 30 series that we've done. I hope you enjoyed the first one, and let's hop right back into this one.
My plan is this coming, once Bella goes to heat, I'm going to get her bred the same sire that we have her boyfriend over in Eastern Iowa. His name is Wrangler. He's actually the direct son of CK Touchdown Guy, who is a multi-time national field trial champion for Vizslas. So we'll do another repeat litter from that. And then I plan on keeping another female from that litter. I'm biased towards female dogs. And then I'll probably wait another year or two, because I'll probably wait till Maggie is probably around 3 years of age, and I'll probably work on probably have another litter for her. And then at that point, I'll decide to keep another female for her, or I'll just sell all the pups, and then I'll get a male from a separate line, so that way I can kind of avoid that stud beers.
Yeah.
This is a matter of who I want to get that beast from. There's a couple of well-known beast breeders here in Iowa, like my buddy Cody, who owns Big Creek Beastless up in Madrid here in Iowa. He does a lot of work with, I think, like Alpine Beastless or Wall Canyon Beastless. So those are kind of like the big three that I hear from as far as like Vizsla breeders here in the U.S. is Wall Canyon, Alpine, and then Big Creek. So just trying to figure out, obviously when you're going to a breeding program, the main thing that you're looking into is you want to make sure that you're trying to improve upon the breed and make sure that you're getting good genetics from both sides of the field. So that's one thing I've really kind of been particular on, is making sure that we're getting good bloodlines from both sides and healthy hips and knees and everything too.
Drew was just reading a book about, what's it, Snakefoot?
Snakefoot.
It's like the theory about the breeding. He can tell you more about it than I can, but yeah, kind of just that theory about, you know, building a base, for your kennel.
Purifying the gene pool, finding the genetics you want, and purifying it to what you want.
Yep.
You read that off a script, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It's on my – I read it actually.
On my mute, though.
Why is he jealous? Because he can't read.
That weird club he's always going to.
We know those Chiefs fans can't read.
You can't steal my joke. I already said it.
So we know those Chiefs fans can't read. So
yeah, so it'd be like, you know, four whiskey drinks in and a Bud Light, and I'm still able to keep track on what where we're at, like podcast.
Did you just say Bud Light?
Travis?
Bushlight.
No, it wasn't me this time. I promise it wasn't me.
CT Uplander beer koozie, you know.
Hey, we got some nice Upland Nomads Yetis coming, so.
Trying to be like you guys here now. Just chasing the dream. But I would say, as far as most memorable hunts, with Bella being, you know, going on 7 years old, this November, I mean, I've hunted her every year of her life, and there's a lot of stories I can really pick and choose from, as far as, you know, chasing after a ring next year on public land in Iowa, hunting up with you guys up in North Dakota for sharpies and hunts for the first time. And then even, you know, getting into quail down in Kansas, you know, for the first time. I would have to say probably my most memorable moment was her second official Iowa pheasant season. So we were hunting up in northern Iowa during our opening weekend. And I think we were just literally one bird short. And I remember we were on this public piece. We were on the far, just her and I, because at the point, it was about midday. So me, my dad, my brother-in-law, my sister, we all kind of broke up and just kind of were hunting on our own areas. But we were on the last bird that we needed. And we were on the far northeast portion of this piece. And she literally got super birdie and tracked this bird for literally, I shit you not, probably 300 yards, point, relocate, back and forth, zigzagging it. And I knew it had to be around just kind of the way how she was acting. And she literally got this bird all the way down to the south, far southwest corner of this piece. I'm huffing and puffing because at that time here in Iowa, it's about roughly 65, maybe 60 degrees. So pretty warm here in Iowa for opening weekend. But she pinned this rooster down in this ditch. The bird got up and I just crunched down on one shot. Just kind of like one of those, you know, scenic kind of views you see like in a hunting show where a dog points bird and bird flushes wildly and you knock him down, and then obviously your dog retrieves at the hand, and then you're basically hooting and hollering from clear across the field just because you're just so amped that your dog works that bird like perfectly, and it all just kind of came together. So that was probably one of my most memorable, a lot of stories I have with her, but that was probably one that sticks out the most in my head with her.
How old was she when that happened?
She was just a little under two. Nice. This is her second official season because I started hunting her when she was 11 months old.
It's awesome when young dogs figure it out, man. It's like the best.
It's probably like the light bulb moment is probably like the thing that draws you in.
Yeah. That was kind of the moment I knew like the light bulb came on with her. Because ever since, like I said, she's been more workhorse. She's always the dog I can rely on everything to. And Maggie is coming into that role too as well. And that's the whole reason why I wanted to get another puppy. Or keep a puppy from my litter, so I didn't have to run Bella as far as I have been. But she's always a dog that always wants to work. If I leave her in the crate in front of Maggie in the field, she's always, I can hear her three-fourths away as I'm deep in the field. I'll still hear her yelling and screaming. Why the hell did you leave me back behind?
Thank you, Cody. Appreciate you sharing.
Yeah.
We'll go up. Travis.
Yep.
She's fan.
Yep. Right now, I've got a smokeless fire pit blowing smoke in my face, so it's going great.
Well, go to the upwind side of it then.
Yeah, but then the light's not in my face, and y'all can't enjoy my beauty.
We don't need to see that. Just your voice.
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, you know what's up.
Yeah. Yeah, don't get me started.
How about that wire hair?
You know what? She ain't that bad of a dog. If she was my only dog, she'd be a great dog. But she's not my only dog. So I've got two dogs I need to get rid of now.
Oh, jeez.
Would she be good with a cocker or no?
Maybe. Is she a male?
No.
Well, that's a possibility.
What do you primarily have then, and what is good that you have?
I don't have anything that's good. But let's be honest. I mean, I have got nothing but trash dogs. And when I mean trash dogs, if they point trash, I shoot it. Like, a lot of my dogs point rabbits and all that because we don't have that many quails. So I'll shoot whatever over my dogs. Robins? No, I'm kidding. I don't want the government after me.
You might be a Texan. Everything's a quail in Texas.
That's right.
Oh, shit.
All right, go ahead with your question, Michael. I don't want to talk to Wyatt.
All right, sorry, I got to pull it up here real quick. All right, got it. All right, give us a little bit about where you're from here.
Well, I'm from the Ozarks of Missouri. We don't have no quail. And as far as I'm concerned, we never had no quail because we can't ever find them. And if you do find them, it's like seeing a unicorn. So, yeah.
Do the dogs?
That's where I'm from. Do what?
So are the dogs playing a factor in that, or do you think they're just not out there?
No, they're not out there. I'm president of the quail forever here in
this
area, and we ain't got no quail.
But there, not much. In all seriousness, was there a time though that were quail there, right?
Oh yeah, there was. I mean, my dad's from here, and he has stories from back in the day. Him and his dad let out the pointers and. They'd just sit on the car hood until they couldn't see him. They'd give it a minute, and then they'd just start walking until they found him, and there'd be a covey of quail. Here in this specific region, it's all fescue, and it's pretty much taken over, and it's just unsuitable for quail. But back so in
as, the- as a quail, as the quail forever, you said you were part of. What are you guys doing for management or for? What are you doing as an organization? I guess either instead of that, or what are you guys doing?
So we're brand new to this. We're just now under our first year. Other than raising some funds, we haven't done much. Now, I say that tomorrow we're doing a, I don't even know the acreage, but we're doing a burn at a state property for quail habitat. And we've, I'm lucky enough to have, or we're lucky enough to have some biologists to kind of bridge those connections with the Missouri Department of Conservation. So that way we can have permission to actually go burn on state ground. So that's been our mission, is to really just bring back and educate of what the natural habitat is actually supposed to be here in Southwest Missouri. Cause we got a lot of glades, and we've got a lot of plateaus that were historically, you know, extensions of the Kansas plains, and, you know, it's all in fescue, which is unsuitable for quail.
Yeah. I was just reading, was I reading or watching something? No, it was Jeff Foxworthy, as I was watching with can't remember who he was talking to, but he was talking about his property in the south, and they were burning, you know, for to bring back, you know, forage for deer specifically. But in the south, you know, in, you know, Missouri, you know, I guess I think it's considered the south, is it not?
We're mid-south.
Mid-south, yeah.
I consider it.
But yeah. How, you know, how much fire helps to bring back, you know, that young growth that quail love and utilize so well.
Oh, for sure. That answer your question?
Oh yeah, we got plenty more for you. First one being, what was your first breed of bird dog?
Well, I got a Brittany. I say that reluctantly because I feel like everyone's first bird dog was a Brittany, but his name is Amos. Named him Amos Moses the Cajun. is that funny?
No, is that not worth, at all.
No, okay,
it sounds very southern, so it's fitting.
It's a old Jerry Reed song.
I thought you were going to say geriatric.
But no, I started with him. My dad had bird dogs growing up, and then as we got older, we had life gets busy. He's end up selling his pointers, and then, you know, fast forward 20 years, I get a Brittany, and I mainly got that to introduce my daughters into hunting. I thought that was going to be a good segue into getting them into the outdoors, into which so far it has.
So what training methods did you use with the Cajun?
I used a good whipping stick, and no, I'm kidding. I used primarily the Smith whip method. Is what I used loosely. I mean, I used his natural ability really to train him the most, and then just kind of went off of that in fine tuning. But yeah, I really didn't do much training. I don't really do much training with any of my dogs, but I just play into their strengths.
You were just putting them out on hunts and introducing them to wild birds and so on, and kind of seeing how they did type thing.
Well, yes and no. You know, I think a dog is, if it's supposed to be a pointing dog, the dog naturally should point. If the dog is naturally supposed to retrieve, it should retrieve. Like my Brittany Amos, he's not the strongest retriever, and I don't necessarily push that on him to retrieve. He will retrieve some, but it's something that I don't really force on him because he doesn't necessarily have that natural ability to do it. And I say that he's a pretty good retriever. Like I take him dove hunting, and he does a great job, but he may drop it 10 foot in front of you, which I know I could clean up the retrieving aspect, but I really don't care. He does a pretty decent job doing it on his own. That answers your question or not.
Oh yeah.
But as for like, I've got a wire hair, I require a little bit more on her for the retrieving side as to, you know, retrieving to him and stuff like that, because I know that naturally plays into her breed and into her style. Whereas for my Brittany, he may go out there 300 yards and point a bird, where she may be at 100 yards searching for birds. But if I shoot one, she's going to be the one that retrieves it, and he's going to be the one that finds it.
So how long have you been hunting them two together, Travis?
Sorry, say that again.
How long have you been hunting those two dogs together?
She's two-ish, and he's three-ish.
So if you don't have birds there, where do you go to hunt?
I mean, I primarily go to Kansas to hunt. I got them both started at preserves, but I really do enjoy the traveling. And I say there's no birds here. There's some. Like, we get a good woodcock migration. Anyways, we get a good woodcock migration down here, and it's nice to get the dogs worked on here. We do have some quail. And, you know, like I said, my dogs are trash dogs. So if it's in season and a rabbit jumps up and they point it, I'll shoot a rabbit. Like, I really don't care. I enjoy rabbits quite a bit.
That's not a trash dog, bro. That's a meat dog.
Well,
stew pot dogs.
You should have seen all the armadillos they pointed this year.
Reading the world of leprosy, yeah. One armadillo at a time.
Yeah, no kidding. So, but yeah.
Travis, you have seven dogs now, right?
Yep, you just heard one bark. But yes, I have seven dogs.
So, like, what are some of your bigger takeaways from, like, having trained the first one to, like, the sixth, second, third, fourth, seventh one, you know?
Well, the first two were cattle dogs, and I found out real quick I'm not very good at training cattle dogs. And turns out you've got to be around cattle like every day, whereas I'm there like once a week around my cows. But the third one was Amos, and it just kind of snowballed from there. My wife got herself a short hair, and then yeah, it all went from there. Sorry, I missed the question. What was the question again?
You already answered the question.
Okay, good.
This is the problem about having you late in the game, because you're already like 6, 7, 8 beers deep.
Oh, dude, I'm...
He's the pace car, dude.
I'm borderline 3 sheets to the wind. I'm literally standing in my closet right now.
I see that. Because
all my damn dogs are barking. So, trying to keep the noise to a minimum here.
Let's just tell us your best hunting story with your first bird dog.
I think it'd have to be when... in Montana, and really seeing him throw that switch of actually working birds, you know, and being into birds consistently and knowing what it is to be an actual bird dog in a sense, you know, instead of getting lucky, it was intentional. I recall him finding a man, we just got into this slough with a bunch of pheasants, and it wasn't even season for pheasants, but him working these pheasants and moving and working and pointing, you know, and the whole time I'm pretty sure he was just working one pheasant, and pheasants were busting out all around him, you know. And it was just cool to watch him click that switch on what it was to work these birds. And then, you know, throughout the whole trip in Montana, we just had a stellar time. We did absolute shit on sharp tails, but man, on the Huns, we did, you know, we put a hurting on them. So that was probably my favorite moment with him.
All the good hunters get Huns. If you have trouble with Huns, you're probably not a good hunter.
Well, I hunt them just like Bob White. So
a White.
That's it. That's what they say about guys that can't get sharp tails.
If I had sharp tails, I promise you I'd out hunt you. But
no, you wouldn't.
I don't.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah. Let's be honest, Wyatt.
Yeah.
He did the easy part. He talked about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, yeah. I love it. But no. How often, like, when you go out to do you find Bobs ever in Missouri?
Oh, yeah. We definitely have them. I was building fence at my place just right here at my house, and we flushed a covey of four in July, which I was super proud about. You know, we kind of manage for wildlife, for deer, turkey, and, you know, we run cattle and all that. But, you know, to flush that covey of Bobs, that was really special to me. And especially when I first came into, you know, running the quail forever, it meant a lot to me. And it was little stuff like, you know, we didn't brush hog to the fence rows. We left a little 3-foot strip on each side, you know. But do my dogs find quail in Missouri? Very seldom, but we have.
I'm just wondering where we can get a camo button up like that.
Dude, I found this in my dad's closet this morning.
Ugh, got the camo on dude. Camo. That's
oh, dude. And it's like vintage, like 1989 Woolrich. Like, it's got the sleeves are chewed up by mice.
Back when men were men.
So that's some high-quality right. Shit we're talking about here.
This was my dad's winter coat back in the day.
Some high-quality shit we're talking about then.
Yeah, screw your Sitka and First Light. We're talking 1989.
I'll die on my First Light Hill. That's all right.
Yeah, I'm sorry I'm screwing up your sponsorship here, but...
we don't got no sponsors. you listen to this show, you go the opposite
way. Yeah, Steve Ranella, he's just like, I mean, I was really considering these boys, but not anymore. That dumb asshole.
Dumb asshole.
Yeah. I love it. Dude, don't pull any punches. I love it.
Nice big pipe beer guy now.
I have gloves and I have a shirt.
I have the gaiters, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And
you wear gaiters and you don't even get out of Missouri.
I wore them when I was bear hunting. So
I've heard that quail numbers in North Missouri are pretty good.
They are. And we have a lease up in North Central Missouri. And we run into a few coveys, but around here it's, you know, slim to none.
I don't want that quail hunt interfering with my Missouri deer hunting now.
Do what?
I want that quail hunt interfering with my Missouri deer hunting now.
Hey, don't speak. We don't speak about that on public airs.
Love it.
We talk about out of state bird hunting. That's what we talk about. That's what the people want to hear.
Right. We give the people what they want.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we give the people what they want. Maybe. We don't know.
Well, we're talking about it. So who cares?
Right. Fuck.
That's right.
We can say that. It's starting to get deep into this episode.
Hate us because they ain't us.
It's an anus. Can't tell we're young kids. Well, before we go into Mike and Drew, I need to refill.
Yeah, it's about time for a pee break.
Michael, stop recording.
No, fuck no. It's going to go by.
It does it on its own. We don't have to worry about it.
Me and Drew got about 30 minutes, boys. We got to be up at 4 in the morning.
Oh, jeez.
All right. I'll start with Mike and Drew. It's weird saying Mike and Drew with my name being Mike.
We call him Michael because we have another Mike.
First time in my life I've ever been the Michael. I'm not mature enough to be a Michael.
All right. So, Mike and Drew, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're from and who you are?
I've been on before. Go ahead and go.
What the heck is going on?
Oh, Jesus.
Where's she at?
Travis, you muted?
Travis is still on.
Travis, mute your mic, please.
You're a 22 shot in the background.
Water, dumb. What's that?
He's gone.
Tearing up the chickens?
I think the host can mute him if you need to.
Probably. I don't know fucking how. Oh, yeah, I can. Here we go. There we go. All right. Well, Drew, since Mike is gone, why don't you tell us about yourself? And
well, I'm originally from Kansas, but I'm out in Condon, Oregon now. Mike and I, we guide hunts out here. I started with one dog in Kansas, and now I'm in Oregon with a string of dogs and constantly training dogs and trying to make myself in the bird dog industry, I guess.
So you say a string of dogs. So how many dogs is that?
That's like asking a rancher how many cattle he has.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
No, it's just how many acres he got.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah. We're north of 15. We're trying to downsize a little bit. I'm now kind of just trying to focus on my own dogs and kind of, I intentionally got into this bird dog world trying to start dogs for other people. So my goal, I guess, as a trainer and as a dog guy is I'd like to buy 8-week-old puppies, develop them to about a year, year and a half, and then sell those as started and finished dogs. I'm lucky where I'm at is, and kind of where I surround myself is I'm into birds all year round and try to get into wild birds. And I've got more pen-raised birds than the man can dream of. So, that's kind of the route that I took with the bird dog industry was developing young puppies and trying to get them ready for other people to enjoy.
Nice. So Mike, for those that may not have heard, where are you coming from? Tell us a little about yourself.
Well, originally I'm from a quiet little town, Oakland, California. my dad and my uncle were waterfowl guides, at least part-time growing up. So that kind of got me into it. My grandfather came here from Italy when he was 10 years old in 1918. He grew up hunting in Italy for subsistence, you know. And so he came to the United States and he found paradise. And so he passed that tradition down. People really don't think of California as like a hunting destination, but I grew up hunting anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half outside of San Francisco Bay Area. So that got me started and got me started kind of a journey that took me all across the West. I got my first, I had German Shorthairs all growing up there, but they're obviously my dad's dogs as a boy. And then when I finally got on my own, I eventually got my first dog 9 years ago, I think he is now. And that started me on a journey of training on my own on a path of just going full time, kind of giving up the waterfowl world and kind of giving up the big game world and just going straight into bird dogs. My dad and grandfather had a base of how to kind of train a bird dog and break a bird dog, but they really leaned heavily on, you know, the natural ability of the dog. But, you know, I was able to kind of learn from some places where I guided, just meeting with the guys who ran the kennels and some guys who were really good old time retired field trialers, and just hanging around them and just kind of picking up tips and tricks and them being gracious enough to kind of pass things down. And yeah, that kind of got me started. And now I got right around 10 dogs or so. Mostly short hairs. I got two cockers and I got my first setter a couple months ago. So we're off and rolling.
Nice. Cockers, they're the way to go, right?
I love my cockers, man. You know, it's all heart, baby. It's all heart. Drew doesn't,
I hate cockers.
Drew doesn't feel the same, but I love them.
I've got two myself and I hate them.
Hey, they're small, but you know, they make up when, well, like you
I
said,
they love people too much.
Drew's a Grinch. He's a callous old soul. They he love, has no heart. You
they
know?
Love people too much. They want to be in your face too much, I think. Like a lab, you know, you can tell a lab to go lay down, or you can tell a short hair go lay down. A cocker wants to be in your lap and touching you.
Yeah, you know, I agree. You say lay down, and they go, well, maybe I'll lay down in your lap.
Yeah, I'll lay down on you. Yeah, on you.
I'll lay on you. As a lab, I call bullshit on telling them to go lay down.
So, Drew, what was what breed of dog was your first bird dog?
So I grew up with short hairs as well. I grew up with them, but we never really bird hunted. We always deer hunted. So as a 19, 20 year old, I got a short hair just as a pet. And then I ended up working in Montana. And then all of a sudden this dog that I'm driving around on my backhoe with, she starts jumping off the backhoe and pointing sharp tails and huns. And I just became hooked to it. So that's kind of how I got into it all.
Nice. So, like, growing up with short hairs, like you said, with deer hunting, though, were they trained at all to track deer, like, or were they just kind of like house dogs?
They were house dogs. They were total pets. I mean, we were active. I mean, I grew up with brothers, and, like, we lived a very active lifestyle. But, like, no, they were house dogs. They cuddled on the couch. They ran in a field maybe once a month, and they were happy. But I can tell you my dogs now are a lot happier than I think my dogs were then. They live good lives. They were loved.
Michael?
Yeah, so it's always been short hairs. It's always going to be short hairs. Like, I have the cockers, and they kind of carved a place in me and my fiance's life. But, yeah, it's always been short hairs. It's always going to be short hairs. They've taken me – like I said, that getting that dog at, I got him at 4 months old, and I was a waterfowl guide at the time, and I stuck him down in the bottom of that duck blind with me. But getting him took me on every Western state with the exception of Utah and New Mexico. And, you know, it's all because of the dog, man. And when I started getting more and more now, it's like, you know, I don't have any kids or anything like that. So, like, the dogs, each one of them has a special place to me, you know. Even when I sell one and move it, I think we talked about this last time I was on with you guys, was, you know, even when you sell one, you know, they all have a special little place. So, but yeah, the short hairs were for me, the athleticism, the intelligence, just they're what it's all about, man. You know, no offense to anyone else's, you know, fine breeds, but
hey, I got them and I'm going to set it real. So,
hey, so that I'm a short hair guy through and through, but you got to have a nice setter in the mix.
Got to have a rare Pokemon, bro.
You got to have a Pokemon in the mix. Exactly.
No, I'd say that rare Pokemon is a cocker.
It's hard to hate on. It's hard to cocker. Hate on these guys.
Or a wire hair. Let's not. All y'all that wants a wire hair, let's just go ahead and throw this back into the bone.
But I do my cocker, bro. They're like yeah, they're bird dogs, but they're like their own little characters, man. Like they're like Ewoks or something, dude. Like they personalities, like their enthusiasm for life, and just yeah, they're their own little category over there. But yeah, you're right. They are kind of, they're all rare Pokemon, dude. That's why, you know, like as much as we poke fun at each other's breeds, you know, like I can enjoy any bird dog on point. I really can, you know.
I just enjoy any bird dog. Yes.
On point. On point.
I just love Pokemon. No, just seeing any dog do what they're bred to do is.
No, yeah, 100%.
It's what we're all about.
100%. I agree.
So, you guys are technically professional trainers.
Yeah.
So called.
Self-proclaimed. Yeah,
self-proclaimed. What training methods do you guys use to, like, do you start with or say, like, I freaking started with this one, but like, fuck this.
Kind of what I've realized is, like, getting more into it is, like, every trainer, they all have their own way, and it takes, like, it's how you bond with a dog. If you, mm-hmm. it's you making a connection with a given dog and taking those natural abilities and enhancing them. So, like, a guy, anyone can do it, but it's the guy that's getting, I guess, just exposed to more stuff, more dogs, more personalities, more different things that dogs will do, I guess, different quirks of different dogs, different quirks of different breeds. You kind of start to see mm-hmm. a lot of things are breed problems. A lot of things are how dogs are raised, I guess, is what I've seen a lot. Properly developing dogs has been a big thing that I've seen as a trainer. A dog that's exposed to birds and given those opportunities to run and be a little bird dog seem to excel a lot more than the dog that's been cooped up in a pen and hasn't been used properly. So just little things like that, you start to kind of pick up on and little nicks and knacks as the more dogs you see. But that's really the difference is you got to be acceptable to change your method and kind of what you're doing. Cause each dog is going to be different because they all do have their own personality.
You just stole my next question. I was just going to ask you, I was like, how do you deal with it? Like different dogs? Cause like not every dog is exactly the same.
No. And that's, I mean, I've got,
and that's,
you know, my short hair, you know, I can go, if you bust a bird, I can go beat him over the head with a shovel. And he's going to hug me 5 minutes later where yeah. I have a setter that if I were to nick her on the collar at too high of an electricity, she's going to shut down for 2 weeks. Or I have, you know, it's just little things like that. You kind of dog. And even some of my other short hairs are a lot softer than my other short hairs.
Right. So like I got this short hair, that the white one. That's on the far side of the couch. He's a little softer than this one that doesn't care what goes on in the world.
Right.
As long as he gets to run a little bit and he gets on birds, he don't care. And he gets to go to his couch at the end of the night. He's happy as a
right.
Happy as all we get out. So.
Yep.
And nothing to my first bird dog either, but.
Well, that's I've got 15 plus now, and I've probably owned 25 plus in the last year, and my first one is still my best one.
He's but something like he's
the first a freak. Bond you have with that first dog is it's something different. I feel like
right. Drew, is that attributed to spending more time with him because he is your first dog?
I feel like yes. I feel kind of like a bad trainer, honestly, to my other dogs. As having so many, I haven't been able to focus on just the everyday life aspect of them. You know.
So do you feel like, because you spent that much time into it with that first dog, and this is the way I feel with my other dogs. My first dog is my best dog because I got that alone time with them, whereas the other dogs, you get that.
The pack mentality.
Well, and you know, a lot of stuff they pick up naturally on their own, right. Where it's not stuff that you focused on with that first dog.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is that way you guys feel with that?
Yeah, I feel like it's almost like it's like parenting, right? Like the first kid is usually the one that had like the parents try to do every single thing that they read in every book, you know, and like write down to And then as you kind of go down to each dog, right, or each like kid, you know, you kind of get a little more, you know, you kind of mold your style to the kid or the dog. And I think that kind of like speaks like what Drew was saying, like, yeah, you know, it's different for every dog, you know?
I kind of like, I agree with you, like with what Matt or Michael's saying, with my first dog, well, my second dog, it's like, man, he's really freaking good. Like at a year and a half, he's
yeah,
way better than what Riggs was at a year and a half.
I mean, I made mistakes. Like, obviously I made mistakes. I made different mistakes with my different dogs, you know, cause you're always learning as a trainer. But with my first dog, the mistakes were more just like, I didn't have a process, right? I was reading everything I could. I was watching everything I could. I was remembering everything that my grandfather and my dad had taught me, right? Trying to come up with the process. Now, fast forward 9 years later, I have a method or a process, at least in my head, or a timeline, at least in my head, where I go, okay, by this date or this period in their life, they should be doing, you know, X, Y, and Z, or I'm going to have them doing X, Y, and Z. But like my second one, she was so good out of the box. You know, like the guy, you know, my buddy who I got her from, first thing he told me was, do not take this dog hunting right away. Like, take time to develop her. First thing I did was drive her straight to Montana and threw her on the ground, took her hunting. Right. You know, like, she is and was so talented that you know, she's been a great dog, but it created problems down the road letting her be that way, so having so much freedom, seeing so many birds so early, and then going into the guiding season of her seeing so many birds so young, working with cockers at a young age, it made her retrieve sloppy. Yeah, just working with a flushing dog at an age before she was truly broke or truly ready for that kind of pressure created her to like flag in scenarios. Now she doesn't do it on wild birds, but in a guiding scenario, and you know, kind of what me and Drew do at the end of the season to make, you know, a living here, you know, you start to see some bad habits peek up their head because the dog has seen so many birds at such a young age. It's too much. I was gonna say it was almost too much, but it is too much. So that's a mistake I made with her. So now, like the two that I'm gonna run tomorrow in this hunt test, I took the exact opposite method, which was the first 6 months of your life. I'm going to give you the rules of being a citizen in the house. I'm not worrying about birds. I'm not worrying about retrieving. I'm not worried about nothing. I'm going to let you be a puppy, but you're going to learn the rules of the house. Then the next 6 months, now we'll worry about getting you introduced to birds. And then by the time September came around for season, I was letting them out and getting them exposed to wild birds in, you know, August, September. And then I shut them down once wild bird season came because I didn't want birds getting shot out of wild flushes over them. I didn't want them chasing birds, nothing. I shut them down. I put them up all the way till I got here in a controlled scenario, and it's paid off. You know, so that's a completely different method than with Rosie, my now 3-year-old, who was like, no, I'm throw you in the deep end and sink or swim. And a credit to her breeding and her genetics. And, you know, I'll say, you know, I got her from Andy Taylor at Steel Fork Kennels. He does a great job with his dogs, and she was just bulletproof. And just every day she got better and better and better. But it did, you know, giving her too much too early and not putting the proper, like, you know, boundaries on her as far as bird exposure, I think did create some issues later on as far as just, like, style and, you know, the finer points of being a bird dog.
So you're talking about one of the really good freaking trainer out there, so.
Andy don't fuck around. Yeah, I mean,
no, you don't.
So Andy, you know, Andy came out this year and hunted with me in Montana, and you know, so I got to see the whole, you know, the young guns coming up in his kennel. I mean, there's some studs in there.
And his kids.
Hey, so. His boys don't fuck around, boy. I'll tell you what, for 2 13-year-old boys, they were making fun of me for how I shot.
So Michael needs to shore up on his shooting abilities, I guess.
Oh man, you know, at this point in my life, all I'm going to say, I do not. Drew will tell you, I don't care if I miss or not. I enjoy going out there and just having, you know, I knock down my fair share. But
it's all about the dogs at this point. That's why I do. That's how I do it. That's why
anybody and people probably make fun of me for it. I'll carry my phone more than I carry the gun. Now I have my phone with me and I'm filming more than I am. You know, I've missed. Right. People probably think I'm a jackass because I probably, you know, I drop the phone when I go to shoot or fucking, you know, I'll just miss, not get a shot or a brutal flush before I get a chance to get gun up. But at this point, I've knocked a lot down with the gun. I'm not, you know, no bragging, just, you know, I'm 35. I've been doing it since I was 9. You know, I'm in it for the memories, you know?
Right.
So, you know.
Been there, done that.
been there, done that, man. Hey, it's tacky to talk numbers.
Right. Yep.
It's truly amazing what a good bird dog will do to new hunters, too. Two new hunters I brought out this year, they are – one of them's already got a dog, and the other one's looking at getting one. And that's just with hunting with a dog that's half broke.
Yeah.
And he's side-eyeing me now because he's judging.
He's like, you're half broke. But, I mean, yeah, just what Laramie said, like, you know, I've taken people deer hunting, duck hunting, all of it, but I've never taken someone hunting with a dog and then not want to come back and do it again. Everyone loves dogs. If you don't love dogs, you are a serial killer.
Well, if you love dogs, you love cats more than dogs. And then,
I mean, who likes cats? I mean, come on, man. I mean, seriously.
Well, Laramie does have cats.
Laramie's got.
Oh, sorry, Laramie.
I have two cats literally staring at me now because they're judging you. I'm not even kidding you. Like, look at this.
But we're assuming that Laramie likes goose more than the cats.
My dogs won't allow cats. So.
You got whiter hair, so they won't live.
Dude,
so.
Man, they live up to their stereotypes, let me tell you. Yeah.
Oh, damn German dogs. I hate that. My German dogs get a bad rap because it's the dang wire hairs.
Dude. The pros outweigh the cons. I do have that one. I don't know. I may have to call Michael or Drew on this dog, but every wire hair I've ever had has just been phenomenal, aside from this outlier.
Oh, but, our boy over here walking around the background, old Jimmy over there, he's got one in that he's running for a client, dude, and she's freaking jam up.
It's a draught.
Draught, yeah.
It's a draught.
Well, man. That's where I'm pretty sure mine's a draught. I registered her wire hair, but everything in her lineage was German, and I was just like, oh god, I don't know what I'm getting myself into. And you know what, I should have listened to my intuition there, because
Guten Tag, Fear Tyler.
Yeah, she's been a pain, but whatever, we'll figure it out.
It'll be all right.
We'll figure it out.
That's all right. You'll get an English setter and you'll be all right.
No, I'll get a pointer.
Red dog. That's what you need. Red dog.
I need something with a tail and something with short hair, because the goddamn cuckleburs. I spend more time picking out cuckleburs than I do anything.
Can you say that slowly for the people in the back?
Say that again.
How do you pronounce cockaburs?
Cockaburs.
Cockaburs. Can you spell that out?
KUCKELBURRSS. I don't know. I don't.
Good thing there's not elementary kids listening to this thing.
I mean, he did grow up in Missouri, so.
Oh. Coming from a guy with a couple cats.
Shots fired.
The cats were not my choice, okay?
I'm sorry, I was talking. What'd you say?
I said cats weren't my choice. Those were my girlfriends.
Oh. Man, well, every guy on here, man. Every guy on here.
Hey, my girlfriend knows how to use a shotgun, and she's pretty fucking terrifying.
Cats are fine.
Literal shots.
Say, Michael and Drew, what were you guys obviously trained quite a few dogs. You have quite a few dogs in your string. Going back to that first bird dog, what were like some mistakes you guys made looking back? They've changed now.
For me, my first one was, he was kind of the one that got me into the guiding. And since he excelled at such an early rate, he has just kind of been exposed to everything. So just, I guess, seeing the amount of birds that we see in a season, guiding is very bad for dogs, honestly. I mean, when you're shooting 10,000 plus birds over a dog in a season, it's, you can develop a lot of bad habits. So I just get, yeah, that first dog is, he's the one that's carried me through all of this. So it's constantly me hounding him to abide by what I already know he knows, but now he seems to be bored of the game. These dogs are very smart, so you have, they do realize what we're doing. So I guess when we get, or when a dog sees as much as they see, they get smart to the game we're playing. And that's the hard part, is trying to correct the behaviors that we know what they should be doing and what they can do, to what they are doing and what we need to let them just get away with to make our life a little easier and get through the guide day.
Trying to keep it fresh. Like, they're hunting the same, you know, you're confined, you know, it's like, you know, this property is almost 4,000 acres, right? So maybe that sounds huge, but over, you know, a couple of, you know, it's like
over 100 days,
over 100 day season, it gets small because the dogs remember where they're at, and they remember. And even though there's birds out here that are residual birds that you're going to find, you know, they're going to know, okay, I know this mail route, let me go run this mail route. So the dogs start to get bored with it. It's not fresh, it's not new to them. And then dogs who have hunted, you know, off the ranch on wild birds, they know the difference. And so they see, okay, this bird's just sitting here, it's letting me get as close as I want, he ain't going nowhere. And then you start seeing your dog play games. Like, I love that. My oldest dog, he's 9, he's a great wild pheasant dog, because he understands when a bird's running, he'll cut off, go up and work back at me, even with the wind's bad, and pin that bird between me and him. Here, he'll point a bird, and like, we're taking forever to get over there with the clients, and he goes, okay, I'm going to pretend that this bird is running, I'm going to cut around in front, and even though he's broke, he's just circling around and pointing it from the other side. Because he's just like, you know, it's there, Dad. So, you know, that's like where you start creating issues. Like, and that's kind of what I was talking about with my Rosie dog. So, like, where me and Drew now is like, okay, it's a double-edged sword, because it's also a great way to get a young dog a ton of exposure quickly and get a young dog jump-started very quickly. But taking them to a certain point and then like, okay, you're done here on this. That's why we have so many.
We have so many, so you can start the young ones, develop them. And then you finish the older ones
out on wild birds, and that's where they're done.
And for a testing scenario.
Yeah. And so, you know,
it's a great starter place for a dog, but as an older dog, you want to get them.
Yeah. You can't, it's diminishing returns.
I know you've probably never heard of too many birds, but there, too many birds can be a problem when they're born on a barn.
Yeah.
When they're I have a question. Is it more frustrating hunting with clients while you're trying to train your dog? Because if they get a bird gets up, do you
on the hunt? That dog should be trained and steady for a cocker before they go on it.
Your dog, like, so my dogs, they're not busting birds ever, you know, but yeah, like, you know, even, and like circling around the front is a drastic example of like flagging. Where a dog's sitting there on a perfect, gorgeous point, and then just whoop, and it'll stop again. Okay, and then, you know, the dog's just, come on, get up here. I'm excited. I know this is how this is gonna go. Now I'll take that same dog and take her up here, you know, on wild birds, and she'll stand there at 400 yards and hold them birds until you get up there, and not move a muscle. So in my mind, it's, she knows. Now, someone may tell me I'm lying,
but she knows.
Gotcha. Because my only experience hunting with guides is waterfowl. So I've never been on an upland preserve or at a lodge or anything like that. So I didn't know if you're training dogs on hunts or how all that was going.
So like, well, like on our off days, you know, like, so, okay. Like I have two young dogs and I was working them on my off days, and I worked them in the off season too, but I worked them on my off days too. I got them to a point where I thought, okay, they're to a point where I'm going to start killing birds over them anyway. Let's start taking them on some guided hunts and we'll work them for, you know, 15 to 20 minutes of the hunt. And they show me they can handle 15 or 20 minutes. I'll give you a half hour. You can handle a half hour. Let's give you an hour loop. Now I'm at the point with them two dogs. They're so young. It's like, hey, go ahead, boys. Enjoy. Now, there'll be days where they're like, get competitive because they're brothers and they're litter mates. If they get competitive, or they're getting a little bit like creepy, like creeping in on the birds. They're just kind of getting a little bit loose. Okay. Now you're back to 20 minutes. And if I got pigeons, okay, now we're going to do some flyaway drills, or we're going to do some whoa post, or if I got a barrel, I'm going to do some barrel or whatever, you know, whatever, you know, technique you want to use. You know, for my older dogs, like Rosie and Marcel, I don't mess around with them on pheasants. Nah, I shouldn't say that. Marcel, I do. Rosie, I haven't ran on pheasants since last year, because she's, for one, she's not a great brush buster. Her strengths are she likes to range and get out there and touch country. So I run her just on the chucker hunts up top, where she can get out there and run, and she's not, you know, the birds aren't really running very much. I like to keep her. I had her broke the wing shot in fall before this last season started. But once wild bird season comes, you know, that goes out the window pretty quick. So
those pheasants, yeah. Man, they wreak havoc on a young dog.
Yeah, you know, I got so Marcel.
They can.
Yeah, no, 100%. No, I agree 100%, because that's why, like, you know, Cosmo and Rex, you know, my dad came out to hunt with me, and he was begging me. He's like, let me run, you know, them two young dogs. And so I let him for like one hunt in the morning, and it was a shit show. And I was like, nope, put him back up. We'll wait, because it's just like for the development of the dog, I got big plans for them too. And so for the development of the dog, you're not ready for pheasants, and I may never put you on pheasants, depending on what kind of dog you are. Now, Marcel, right. my 3-year-old, he comes from a little more European lines. He's, you know, he's a little more DK. He'll range out big. He's he's mixed, but, you know, put his nose to the ground, and he does great on pheasants, you know, but, you know, they're wild pheasants. Most of, you know, once after the first 2 weeks, most of them are getting away from you anyway, you know.
You're right. It's like I can take Riggs, I can drop him, because that's like his bread and butter is freaking pheasants. But Cash, it's like, yeah. But if I drop Cash on Sherpy Hans Sage Grouse, that's where he excels. Not that he doesn't do fine in pheasant cover.
And that's what, like, we talk about how many we have. You know, you got each dog is different. Each dog runs different. Each dog has strengths. Each dog has weaknesses. Now, they all have to have a baseline of shit they do. You know, you got to retrieve. You got to be able to find birds. You got to be able to back. You got to be able to hold point. You know, we got lists of things you have to be able to do. But within that, they all run differently. They all have different strengths, different weaknesses. And so it's, you know, it's a mix and match. You know, me and Drew were both, like, you know, ex-athletes. You know, Wyatt, you think you played ball too, you know? So you kind of think of it that way too, like, you know, what guys go together well, you know.
I say, like, Riggs, he's a hunter and underdog, but Cash, that's like the big thing of pheasants. Like,
yeah,
you want a close work and short hair. Like, close work and short hair is pretty freaking great in a pheasant.
Pheasants, yeah.
Yeah, for pheasants, great. Cash, he's 0 to however far he wants to go, which is, depending on the cover you're working for pheasants, less than ideal.
Like, yeah. That's why I don't run Rosie. It's like she wants to run and get out there and get out, and, you know, she don't want to get down in a ditch and work a bird. So, you know, hey, why force her? Why force her to do that when her strength is getting her out there on the prairie and letting her, you know, reach out there and find me a covey, you know, or chucker in the chucker hills where she can, you know, touch every single little draw. I ain't got to walk over there. I can just walk the ridge line and watch her work up and down every little draw, nook and cranny, until she gets on point, you know? So,
So, like, are your bigger takeaways from, like, training your first dog to your 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th?
I mean, I think the biggest thing, like, everyone has said already, patience, which that's something I watched Drew with his dogs, like, even more than me, is, like, just his patience with the puppies, like just taking his time. So for me, you know, because I'm a guy who lacks patience because I have enough dogs too. It's like, if I'm working a dog and they're not cooperating, or they're not giving me, you know, 100%, or not giving me the full, I just put them up, roll on to the next one. You know, that's not, you know, I'm not going to bang my head against the wall. I'm not going to have a negative experience for the dog. I want to try to always end on a positive, and short sessions are better than long sessions. That was something from working my young dog, or from my first dog, Duke, was, you know, it's great when you get him to do something, it's cool, right? And you want to keep getting him to do it over and over and over again, because it's so cool when you first get him to be able to, like, you know, do whatever. But it's like, hey, end on a positive, keep the session short and sweet, and, you know, be patient.
So do you hold like any animosity towards those dogs? Like, I'm sure you have your favorite, but do you hold grudges against your dogs? Because I mean, I'll be completely honest. I find myself doing that in the field. It's like, okay, you're not doing this. Forget you. You know, whatever. You're in timeout. You know, yeah. Essentially.
I talk to my dogs like they're human beings. You know, like me and my oldest dog, we have arguments. You know, Rosie, I call them silent arguments. We're just like, she don't like being touched with the collar. And she knows that she can creep on these birds here a little bit. So if I hit her with the collar, like even on a low setting, she'll look back at me almost like, oh, really? Like, you know, and so it's like these little silent wars. But animosity, no, because at the end of the day, I love them. They love me. Not to make it hokey, but.
Sure. No, I get it.
Like, there's things that they do where I know they're going to do it that pisses me off. Don't get me wrong. Like Marcel, my best dog, he loves to eat deer shit. I couldn't tell you why. Couldn't tell you what it is. He's a connoisseur of all kinds of fine shits. Deer, moose, bear, whatever he finds out there on the trail. I hate that. But hey, he's a dog, dude. Like, you know, if he could speak, he'd probably tell me it's delicious and I should try it. You know, so it's like, I'm not going to hold it against him.
Tell you if it's a buck or a doe at least.
He's a 180, dad. But a whiner or a barker. But see, I try to nip that in the bud at a young age. It's like, we set the rules early here. We're not going to have no nonsense barking and whining. You know, and I don't really, I just from a young age, it's like, oh, nope. The hose is a great tool for that. You'll spray with the hose. Hey, shut the fuck up. Enough. You know, thank you.
Touché.
You know, that's kind of how I do it with them. But, I mean, animosity, no, dude, they're dogs. They're not trying to ruin my day, man. He's just being a dog, you know. I try to remember that. I get mad at myself, and I feel bad sometimes because I'm like, you know, man, I'm holding them to such a crazy standard. Like, you know, they bump a bird, and I'm like, you know, I get upset. I'm like, dude, what about when I miss one, you know? It's like I try to, you know, reflect on that, and like, they're dogs, man. Like, they're just out there. They want to have a good time too. You know,
yeah.
You know, it's like we're holding them to this crazy standard. Like, yeah, man. I just try to enjoy them. No, don't get me wrong, man. I'm not perfect. There's times where I get frustrated and totally. There's times I blow it. Don't get me wrong, man. But like, yeah, I try to keep that in mind though. Like, he's not busting birds to be an asshole to me. He's just being a dog, you know. So yeah, it's not personal.
Ain't nothing personal.
Yep.
All right. No, cool.
No, the German dogs do. Sure. The German dogs do make you feel that way sometimes, though, because they're so smart. They look at you like, don't knock it off the table. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. No, they're assholes. Let's just be honest.
So, getting into our last question for you guys. What's your favorite hunting memory, your first bird dog? No crying.
I'll just tell one from this season, I guess, because Zeno's kind of been everywhere. This year I was getting to hunt along the John Day River, and the river was moving pretty wild, and a pheasant got up pretty wild, came over at like 60 yards, and I dropped it across the river. Zeno didn't see the shot or anything, but I was able to send him across this river, and this thing was ripping. Like, it took him probably 100-150 yards downstream, and then was able to send him back up the river, and he made that retrieve and swam back across. And I've got that bird actually in the freezer because it's got a nice 25 and a half inch long tail that I'm gonna mount. So it's a hell of a retrieve. And if you could have seen the speed of that water, then it was pretty impressive.
Just don't make the same mistake I did on my sherptail that I had in the freezer to be mounted, and clean the freezer out and forget to put the sherptail back in.
Yeah.
That luckily I double bagged it, and I got a call from the wife like 5 days later. I was like, she's like, you're gonna be mad, but I was like, what the fuck happened?
And you're not mad.
What and what did you do? And she was like, I didn't do anything, you did it. And I was like, what did I do? She's like, you know that sharp tail that she had in the freezer to go to the taxidermist? Yeah, you left, you never put it back in the freezer after you cleaned the freezer out. It's been sitting on the counter for in the laundry room for 5 days. So, yeah.
Probably stank.
She was a wee bit ripe. It probably did, but it was in like two Ziplocs and then a garbage bag. So I don't know if it stank or not. But it wasn't putting it back in the freezer to bring it back to a taxidermist after being 5 days out and right. 60
fermented sharptail IPA, baby.
it was like finally a sharptail. Like I shot it like end of November over both my dogs, and I was the one that found it. And I was like, and it was a huge sharp tail. And I was like, I'm just gonna mount this one. I was like, whatever. And then I was trying to find finally found a taxidermist, and then I was gonna take it to him, you know, cleaned out our freezer for milk supply, you know. So yeah.
For me, with Duke, it's hard, and like Drew said, it's hard to narrow down when it's been 9 years of a lot of great memories. I guess the one that's sticking out in my head the most, there's two. One was probably a few years ago, probably 5-6 years ago now. I think it was five. When we first had success on Chucker, that was kind of a long road. I did it in the mountain range, what me and Steven were talking about earlier. And it was a mountain range that meant something to me from an experience prior. And so, yeah, that was a pretty cool one. We were up in these crazy rocks. We were hunting around a guzzler that was made for bighorn sheep, and it just the terrain looked crazy. It looked like Iran. And you know, Duke, his pedigree's nothing special. I got him for free on a highway truck stop from a guy who just was trying to sell him to somebody else, actually. And we got about three species to go to kill every upland species on the continent, so, or at least in the United States. But anyway, we were working over the top of this ridge, and no matter what, he's always the first dog to get on point. And I look over the top of the ridge, and I can just see the top of his head. It's so steep, and right between his ears, I can see a covey of chucker running single file. I can see their heads bouncing. And so I'm sprinting downhill through these crazy rocks, and they get up and flush at like 90, and I just take these Hail Marys at them. And I watch them fly out this ridge, and they go all the way out to this point, and they land on the backside of this point on this ridge, and I yelled to my buddy. I said, I'm going for him. And I took Duke and Rosie around the backside, and I worked my way around, and I kept the dogs close so the chucker couldn't see me coming. I stayed quiet so they wouldn't hear me coming, and I got to the backside of the ridge, and I let my dogs go, and they went right over the top, and they both got on point. They were both backing each other, and I walked over the top, and they flushed, and I killed a triple. And yeah, I felt pretty accomplished. And that old dog, man, he just, every time I take him anywhere, like I took him up mountain quail hunting this year, and I got all these young dogs, all these fancy pedigrees now, and still the first dog to get on point. Still the first dog to get on point, and I went up there, shot my mountain quail, and that was the first mountain quail I killed since I was 10 years old. And you sound to cry, so I'm trying not to, but I almost lost him this summer to heat stroke on a fluke accident, and yeah, I wrote a whole thing about him. Just, he's been a great dog,
and it's all right if you cry. It's all right.
Yeah, man. He's just, I'm reflecting now because I know there's not, you know, not much time left with him as far as, you know, the best days are probably behind him. But he's been a good dog, man. He's been a really good dog, and he's taken me. You know, my Instagram handle is the Roaming Uplander, because that dog's taking me all the way across the West, and yeah, I kind of owe him everything. I'll never forget. The last thing I'll say, and me and Drew got to get out of here anyway, but I remember I was going through a divorce, and the marriage counselor said, you know, Michael, your wife wants you to get rid of the dog. And I said, I'll get rid of her before the dog, because the dog loves me. And that was facts, dude. That dog to this day still freaking loves me, dude. He'll do anything for me, and he busts his ass for me. And that's all you can really ask for. Forget all the fancy pedigrees and all the fancy training. They do it because they love us. And so, yeah. Yeah.
Amen to that. As a, there's not many things on the planet that would do more for you than they would for themselves.
At least they'll retrieve birds for you.
So I got a question. How many birds you got left? What birds do you have left to get in North America?
Woodcock, I've only ever seen one woodcock with my own two eyes, and it was in Wyoming while I was deer hunting. So we got a woodcock, we got a ptarmigan, and we got a prairie chicken, and a maroon squirrel, and a maroon.
Oh, so you got four.
Those are the last four.
Yeah. Well, Drew should be able to help you with the prairie chicken.
I can do the prairie, yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's, you know what, man, it's one of those things where it's always about, like, every year I've been telling him and a couple other guys, like, every year, I'm going back to Kansas. And, you know, it just comes down to time, money, miles, you know.
Yeah.
Never spend enough money, you know.
So with kind of like us closing out, I guess, is this next season, Michael and I are kind of going out on our own and kind of doing our own thing. I've now got this place in Idaho where I've got a shit ton of wild birds out my back door. And so this next season is literally just – a year for me and my friends to just take off, and we're just going to go bird hunt every fucking day. So I'm kind of extending this to anybody and everybody. If you want to come hunt Hell's Canyon, Chucker, Huns, whatever it is, get on my schedule so we can get it planned, because any of my friends are welcome. Any of my friends are invited. I've got a place for you to crash. Like, let's just get after bird. So I mean,
amen to that.
Yeah. We take priority on this list because we're doing beer 30 together.
Yeah, there we go. Hell yeah.
I've got a busy wild bird season next year, but like, when we're there in Idaho, then like, yeah, let's get it in and let's get it on the books. And like, yeah.
And that's kind of like me and Drew, we've been doing this. I grew up hunting wild birds my whole life. That's my passion. Wild birds, wild places, and my dogs are what takes me there. And we've been working at Orvis places and lodges and whatnot. And me and you guys had to talk behind the scenes one time kind of about that thing, and I think probably within the next 6 months here we'll probably have that conversation. But I don't know, I think me and Drew just expect more from, like, if you're going to take from the resource or pretend to take from the resource, you should give back to it, right? And so that's kind of us. We're about, like, the experience, we're about the dogs. And, like, the amount of birds or whatever is kind of secondary. We've got some places that we're trying to, like I said, we've already got Idaho and a couple other places locked down, but we got some really cool places that people haven't hunted before that we're hoping to open it up to hunting in the future. So, that's, life is short, man. Life is short. And so, the world is crazy. You're not promised tomorrow. So you might as well do the things that you want to do and experience the things you want to experience now, So, it's all about making memories.
Awesome.
Hell yeah, make a t-shirt, man.